Blog Talk Radio.
Psychiatrist in private practice since 2003. Dr. Carroll previously was the director of inpatient services at the Bay Pines VA Hospital and the Bay Pines VA Medical Center. Dr. Carroll specializes in the treatment of children ages 6 and older and the treatment of adults, in other words, from the womb to the tomb. She's also an all-time triathlete. And if you have any problems breaking through to any athletic wall, give her a call at her office and she'll be able to help you out. Phone number is area code 813-689-2466. She's located at 336 East Bloomingdale Avenue in Brandon, Florida. Tonight's program is dedicated in memory of Patrolman Charlie Condit of the Tarpon Springs Police Department, Patrolman Lou, and Patrolman Rodriguez of the New York Police Department. All three were taken from us in the last month. And in the last week we had a very horrible thing happen where a young lady, Phoebe Johnchuk, was thrown to her death by her father. So our prayers go out to all the families on those. Well, guys, we've been off for a while. It's been a great holiday season for everybody. And how'd you guys do?
Good, man. Happy holidays to you, Butch, to Zito. I missed you, knuckleheads, man. It's glad to be back on the air with you guys.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely.
I guess we ought to dedicate the next two programs to Dr. Ron and Dr. Chris because they're down battling each other in Puerto Rico on the golf course. We'll see who comes out alive after the next 2 weeks.
You know, I don't know who'll come out ahead on the golf course, but I can pretty much guarantee the territorial island of Puerto Rico will come out behind with those two guys there. So,
or at least with their ears burning.
I'm just curious. Does Fighting Words have a bail fund? Because we may need to end up sending some money to the beautiful island of Puerto Rico. So.
No, we just spent that money on sending earplugs to all the people in their compound.
Yeah. Good thing
we
had neither one of those guys are fluent in Spanish, so
no.
That would probably be a whole other issue we have to deal with. So.
And thank God they don't stutter because they both talk with their hands, they break their fingers as they're talking. You know, I just saw a report that Golden Boy and I guess Al Haymon have split ways, huh? Did you guys see that?
Well, what it is when Al Haymon was working more closely affiliated with Golden Boy, which he still does, because a lot of the fighters like Keith Thurman that you see appear on Golden Boy contracts are actually Al Haymon fighters. They don't necessarily have contracts with Golden Boy. But he was closest, Al Haymon, that is, to Richard Schaefer. So when Richard Schaefer left, there was some speculation as to whether his fighters would be appearing on the network. They have settled out of court, Schaefer as well as Haymon. And you got to remember, Schaefer just gave a whole bunch of money to NBC to get his guys on NBC. So it's interesting to see where he takes his vast stable of 50 to 60 fighters. And what he does with them. There's been a lot of complaints about his matchmaking and him matching his guys soft. Obviously, Danny Garcia has been at the top of the list as far as people who feel he's getting matched softly. With that said, Haymon is in a position. He is a big power broker, and he's in a position to make some really positive things happen next year. So you just got to hope for the best. You got to hope for that he not only looks out for the benefit of his clients, but for the benefit of boxing in general.
Yeah, he's
and that's
got,
the whole thing.
Yeah, they lost the use of Schaefer for 1 to 2 years. He can't promote, but that's kind of going to be kind of hard on Marcus Maidana, Danny Jacobs, Peter Quillen, Lamont Peterson, Ursulanda Laura, and a bunch of other guys that you said Keith Thurman and Robert Guerrero, and there's another
name to
be
added
to the. The Al Haymon.
Those guys they're going to be making good money with Al Haymon.
We're going to make that announcement here in about a week.
They're going to be making money with Haymon. The question is how competitively will he match them? What kind of fights are we going to see on TV? The guys that are signed with Haymon are signed with Haymon because they know that is probably where they can make them, you know, get the most lucrative contracts. And so they'll be fine from a financial standpoint. It's just a matter of legacy and, you know, again, competitiveness to the fans is what, you know, we're looking for. And mm-hmm. Al Haymon, to this point, especially 2014, didn't provide that. And that is the big question going forward. If Al Haymon was giving fans the fights they wanted to see, there would be no question. They say, hey, this is great things with NBC Sports. He's taken his giant roster, kind of moving them away from Golden Boy, but he has a platform for these fighters. The only question is, and Kathy Dula questioned this herself, is what he's going to do with it. That is the big question.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because, you know, Kathy Ellen and Russell Peltz have really done a heck of a job up in the Northeast. In fact, there was an article this week in Fighting News, rather, about how 2014 was a boom year for Philadelphia boxing, and it does go back to the fact that they were doing so much up there with Hopkins, Garcia, Amir Khan, Stevie, and all those other guys. As a matter of fact, there was a fight that was supposed to be one this week and one next week in Chester at the Harris, Philadelphia. And because of construction here, they're having to move that up to the 2300. So we're starting out 2015 with another eight or nine fights coming into Philadelphia.
What Kathy Duva, along with Russell Peltz, was able to do, you know, a lot of times people say, oh, Philadelphia boxing is making a comeback. It's not making a comeback. It's always been here. The fans just haven't been there. And what Kathy Duva and Russell Peltz were able to do is they were able to turn a national spotlight to the Northeast boxing scene, again, through NBC Sports. My fear is with them losing that to Al Haymon, we still get some of these fights, but all of a sudden they don't have that national spotlight. So all of a sudden, Amir Mansour, you don't go to the 2300 arena and see Amir Mansour on an NBC Sports show. So if he's on an NBC Sports show, it's probably not going to be in Philadelphia next year, this year. So to me, that was the big loss, because it truly took away from Northeast Coast boxing. But again, Al Haymon has a vast stable of fighters. If he matches the fights that fans want to see, it's going to be huge for boxing. But nonetheless, it is at, you know, to the detriment of the Northeast boxing scene, though. It really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that does. They had pretty much tied up Atlantic City, Philadelphia, Chester, and Bethlehem, and had been working very closely with Marty Feldman, David Feldman, Joey O'Neary, Joey I Productions. Those guys were working pretty well together, and now I guess the question's going to be, I haven't talked to Russell in a couple of weeks, but I think I'll try and get him on for next week and see what's planned ahead, what they're doing, and who they're going to match their guys up with. One thing you were saying there, and I've heard it from boxers, is that Russell got me a fight, but it wasn't with who I needed. And a lot of the guys are a little worried that the money isn't there because they're not getting the type of fights that they want. So
without the television contract, the money is definitely not going to be there like it was.
Right, right.
And so now, as opposed to Kathy and Russell kind of having exclusivity with NBC Sports, again, that has been granted to Al Haymon. So now you get a Kathy Duva taking in the Amir Mansour, Stevie Cunningham, Russell Peltz, and they're going to have to try to get them on, you know, undercards. Like, I know she has Stevie possibly fighting Czar Glaskov on the Jean-Pascal Kovalev undercard, but outside of that, you know, for them to get TV dates, they're going to have to bandy with ESPN and HBO and Showtime, but now they're going to have to bid and fight with other, you know, other promoters. So it really does change the landscape of Northeast boxing from a national standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Z, what do you think?
Well, it definitely takes the fighting out of local hands as far as promotion-wise. I mean, it does inhibit the individual promoter or on the Northeast to a certain extent. But in all honesty, when you're talking about money, Al Haymon, he appears to be a wise businessman. So it seems like eventually you're going to have some sort of matchmaking, because that's what the money is going to demand. So you could bleed it out and have a whole bunch of hometown fights, easy hometown fights, but eventually the money is going to tell you that you need to step up competition. Danny Garcia, especially, to be honest.
Because fans will stop watching, right, Z?
Not only that. I mean, how are you going to put Danny on a pay-per-view?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, right. That's where you make the real money at. So, I mean, when you do that, you're going to have to match him up big.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, talk about matching up big. The big guy's running his mouth again, and he's about to have a fight, and he's still shooting off his mouth that he wants a certain other person. Now, can anybody fill in those blanks, those two blanks? I'll give you the first first letters of his name. His first one will be S, and the second one will be B.
Shannon.
Yep.
No, Lord.
Well, you know what happened. The Barclays event, Vladimir Klitschko was scheduled, as far as we knew, to fight Brian Jennings at the Barclays Center, I think in April. So, I mean, that was pretty much a coup, especially coming off of Vladimir's last performance. They wanted him to start fighting a little bit in the United States against some of our so-called contenders. For whatever reason, I just read recently that the money for that fight is not cool from Brian Jennings' side. Brian Jennings apparently is not happy with the offer. So right now they say they're still trying to hammer out negotiations with Brian Jennings, but in the meantime, the first name that came up on the list was Shannon Briggs as being a possible contender. Now, not a contender, but contender for the title in that particular fight. Now, a lot of people would complain about Shannon Briggs, but to take the fight on relatively short notice and to have it in Brooklyn at the Barclays Center, Shannon Briggs makes sense. He's done some internet stuff that's, you know, brought some, you know, attention, quote unquote, to himself. But even more so, he's a Brooklyn guy. He's a New York guy. So that's a fight that possibly could be sold, especially if he were to pull some other kind of shenanigan on YouTube again. So that's a fight that could be sold in the short term.
Well, that's basically what Shannon Briggs is saying. Hey, I was born and raised here. I fought here. You know,
exactly.
Give me a chance. I'll bring your money in for you.
And I feel sorry for Shannon Briggs. I feel sorry for him because he's going to get in the ring with Klitschko eventually, and Klitschko's going to take out all of that frustration on knocking him out. It's not going to take too long, but he's going to punish him for a little bit.
Sure.
But that's why I don't feel sorry for Shannon Briggs, because his brother beat the living daylights out of Shannon Briggs. It had him in a hospital. Klitschko is going to beat him up and then put him to sleep. It's going to be merciful. Shannon Briggs is going to count his money and laugh and think of the next thing to make money. This, you know what? In America, one thing that's always been big in America is get-rich-quick schemes. And Shannon Briggs has, you know, he's kind of found it. And if it pays off, you know, God bless him.
The guy's invested. I mean, he's invested in this. I mean, he rented out a $600 boat to go ahead and hassle the guy. He's a heckler.
He paid $600 for this. Yes.
He's a heckler. I mean, you got to love it.
Sure. Hey, how many times do you sit in a football game or a baseball game and heckle people and get nothing for it? You pay me $600, I'll go out there. Shoot. Z, you're our footwork and conditioning guy. What do you think the FightNews.com came out with their knockout of the year, and it happened to be Walters knocking out D'Artagnan. You want to talk about that? Is it from the finesse point of it?
Well, that definitely had to be one of the leading candidates. I personally think the Mansoor knockout was the knockout of the year.
Mm.
You have to look out for Nick Walters. He's a guy you're really going to have to watch. He can box pretty good. He can take a good shot. And he has power. He has one-punch knockout power. I mean, and that's like Tommy Hearns with a chin almost. I mean, he can't box as fluid as Tommy, but I mean, he could do it from range, and he has the power to do it from him. And he's still relatively young, to be honest, relatively.
Mm-hmm. Ty?
But, I mean.
Ty, what do you think? Oh, we lost Ty. Hold on just a second. There we go. Ty, you back?
Hey, guys, yeah, I'm sorry. I have this new phone, and it's, like, super sensitive. I completely agree with Zito. Aesthetically, the knockout of the year was, to me, definitely Amir Mansoor, Frederick Cassis. That was absolutely the most brutal knockout I've seen this year. Probably from an announcement in boxing, the Nicholas Walters knockout was big. You know, if you're a hardcore boxing fan, you knew Nicholas Walters was coming. Zito predicted Nicholas Walters to handle D'Artagnan before the fight. Or not D'Artagnan, I'm sorry, to handle Donaire before the fight. But to the casual fan that knew that Nonito Donaire was one time a pound-for-pound guy, for, you know, Walters, a young guy, 24, 25, 26, to go in there and knock him out cold, it was big. And it was the biggest statement in regards to a knockout, even though I don't necessarily think it was aesthetically the knockout of the year. But it definitely made the biggest statement in boxing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. I think Mansoor, and then when Mansoor had, I thought the bloodiest fight and the most that you guys happened to get a chance to see it was Stevie and Mansoor. I think probably the best fight that was put on in the last year, maybe the last 2 years.
Yeah, it was one of the more entertaining fights. And both guys had to work. Both guys, I mean, they worked hard and they were ready for that fight.
Mm-hmm.
So you appreciate that effort.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fight that's a contender for fight. You know, that was a contender for fight of the year, and it was definitely the best fight I've seen live. And you know, both guys deserve kudos. And it was good. As you know, Stevie got the victory, and he's you know going on, and now he could be on the. You know, undercard of a big pay-per-view. And Amir could also be on that undercard as well. So, you know, kudos to both guys. Amir was able to come back and have that spectacular knockout and right the ship after the Cunningham loss. So,
you know, another Philadelphia fighter, I just happened to have a chance to talk to over Christmas, according to wish him a Merry Christmas, was our good friend Eddie Chambers. Eddie has moved to England.
And yeah, he's a trader with Tyson Fury's people.
Yeah, yeah, that's what he told me. And he's now 6-0 over there, so he feels that he made the right move.
That's good news for Eddie.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you guys remember, last time we had Eddie on the show, he was talking about going over to England to start training with those guys, and he's been over there, he stayed over there.
Dang.
There is some talk of him fighting, I forget who, I don't want to say, I don't know why, Arthur Spitzka, it's coming to my mind, but it could be coming to my mind for some other news. But there is talk about Eddie having a fight coming up very shortly with the you know first contender guy. So, I think it was at heavyweight as well.
Well, that would be you know that was. It's great to hear the uptone of his voice after having six under his belt. But then he was also saying, you know, I could. If I had gotten this kind of training over at home, I'd have been the same way. But we'll see what happens. But we wish him a lot of luck. He's a good guy, and in fact, we have a couple bloopers here that I put on every now and then because it took Eddie like four takes to do a promo for us, and three out of the four takes. Bob, he messed up, and all you can hear is Bobby just howling through the thing.
Wow. But treat him like Floyd Mayweather reading. That's wow. That's not good.
There was some more stuff on the, I guess it was Yahoo, about Floyd.
Excuse me.
The possibility of them getting together or not getting together.
Who's that? Floyd and Manny?
Yeah. Yeah.
If you know what? Honestly, right now, I think that fight has the best chance that it's ever had at being made upcoming. And to me, part of the reason is I hear, you know, different reporters talk, but not only that, you hear the different camps talk.
Right.
And I've heard Floyd Mayweather and his team say, we don't, you know. Now, remember, they were talking all about Amir Khan. Now, all of a sudden, it's, we don't need Amir Khan. You know, what has Amir Khan done? I mean, Floyd with Amir Khan's butt. And I remember Freddie Roach was also at one time talking about Amir Khan. Freddie Roach just said, Amir Khan, Danny Garcia would be a better fight. Amir used to spar with Manny. He did well early. Manny did well later. But Amir's, you know, he's fast. He's just going to run around the ring. Danny Garcia comes to fight. So it's funny. I think they both can see what something Zito and I – and I think a lot of other people can see the writing on the wall, the end of the road. And I remember after watching Floyd fight that rematch with Marcos Madonna, Zito turned to me and he said, you know what, he better be careful who he fights next. Because the fact of the matter is if he's going to have a hard time beating one of these younger studs, and Zito turned to me and said his best bet now is to fight Manny Pacquiao. Because all of a sudden you lose to an Amir Khan as opposed to fighting a Manny Pacquiao, win or lose, you do better. You know, it looks better for you. And I think that's the point where they're at. I think they're kind of at the point where if they want to enhance their legacies and not diminish from it, they have to fight each other. Because it's very possible they can lose to a Keith Thurman or to an Amir Khan. And that, from an ego standpoint, from a marketability standpoint, specifically from a marketability standpoint, is much more detrimental than losing to a Manny Pacquiao or Floyd Mayweather. And I think Zito called that right after the Floyd Mayweather fight. I always thought Khan would be a tough fight for those guys. But, again, I give Zito full credit. He called it, and I can see that's the direction that they're going. Whether they're going towards each other, don't know. But they're definitely steering away from some of the, you know, more threatening fighters. Like again, the big talk with Khan now with Pacquiao is if Mayweather doesn't happen, you know, Danny Garcia or Jesse Vargas. So, you know.
Well, thank you for the credit, brother. But, I know that, and looking at the fight against Madonna, I saw from a technical standpoint, and the fight with Pacquiao and Bradley, I saw with both fighters from a technical standpoint that they both slowed down.
Mm-hmm.
They both were, Pacquiao's feet and fists slowed down. Even in the Algeria fight, I mean, Algeria couldn't blow wind at Pacquiao and do any better than his fist. So, I mean, he couldn't touch, he couldn't even hurt Pacquiao to save his life. Pacquiao just walked through everything that Algeria had. But he slowed up. Pacquiao, his feet and his fists have slowed up. And Floyd, he can't get away from, you know, certain shots anymore. Marcos Madonna has become a very smart fighter. But
Fighters
in the past couldn't hit Floyd. I'm going to say faster fighters, better fighters at going to the target haven't hit Floyd with the punches that Madonna was hitting with. And so from that standpoint, if Floyd goes ahead and fights with Keith Thurman, I think he'll get destroyed. If Pacquiao fights with Keith Thurman, I think he'll get destroyed. I mean, these young, hungry guys, Amir Khan, I think both fighters will get sliced up. Pacquiao, Amir Khan runs around and everything, Freddie Roach says, but he'll run around throwing fists in Pacquiao's face all night long. And Pacquiao will have a hard time finding him at this stage in his career.
And you know, it's funny you said that because the first thing, you know, they always say, well, you know, speed is the first thing to go, power's the last. But the one of the things that starts happening with older boxers is they start having problem with movement. They can't catch guys. And it's funny that you said that, Zito, because for the beating that that Pacquiao put on Algeria, he really could never catch Algeria, though.
No, he could have hit him to finish him with anything.
Yeah, and you know what? And there were times where he missed badly. And Amir Khan can do a lot of the things Algeria did. He just does it harder, you know. So
faster.
Oh, God, faster. I think, honestly, the big news coming out of the week, though, Butch, and again, I have to hearken to Zito because he wrote an article on this young man's career not so long ago, was the fact that Andre Ward has signed a contract with Roc Nation Sports, which is Jay-Z's company, and now he's talking about a possible March or April ring return. I guess my only question with that is where does the litigation stand with Goosen and the late Dan Goosen? Just because he signed a contract with Roc Nation doesn't mean that he is free to fight under Roc Nation's banner if that litigation is still going on. So I just found that very interesting. It's definitely the biggest news in the last couple of weeks, though.
Yeah, there was something in Fight News this week that I had seen. I may be the same article you're talking about. Excuse me, but he was talking about a early April fight. So. That and they did talk that mention about the Goosen thing, so I guess he must be must have somebody that's negotiating for him in the to get out of that and to get himself into the ring.
But you never know. Roc Nation might have bought his contract out from
good
the.
Up. Could have.
I mean, that's possible. That's possible. They offered Peter Quillen what? How much for the?
He was going to get $1 million for Matt Korobov.
Yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't think it's beyond, you know, thought with that.
A funny side note to Roc Nation's entree in sports, in boxing, is they also offered Adrian Broner a deal. The deal was $8 million over 5 years, I believe.
Yeah, I think it was.
And I think that's what it was. And he was, you know, supposedly to fight twice a year or something. But he was completely turned off by the offer. And I can understand that because that would, you know, I remember it roughly came out to about $2 million a fight, which obviously is a guarantee like $2 million a fight, which is pretty good considering that you fight a guy like you fought last time, Emmanuel Taylor, you're not supposed to get paid $2 million for that fight, not if you're Adrian Broner. With that said, I think he also looks at his upside and the earning potential. He sees the Floyd Mayweather's Manny Pacquiao's making, you know, $10, $20 million a fight. He wants to make more. But what was funny was that, you know, he basically said, F Jay-Z and Roc Nation Sports. It then, for whatever reason, he went ahead to also speak negatively of the singer Rihanna. And said
wow.
She could only offer him sex, basically, but he used the P word. So, he's doing what he's doing. But he, you know, I say all that to say he definitively turned down the Roc Nation Sports offer. So,
to say the least.
You know, I've just found that thing on Andre Ward talks about. He tweeted out today that he's now part of Roc Nation's, and he. Said, you know, when I was with Guzman, I sat out all of 2013, all of 14, and got nothing because of my fight with him. So he's happy to be over there with Roc Nation, and he didn't have too many good things to say about Jay-Z at all.
You know, it's funny. He won the Super Six, was all of a sudden widely regarded as the second best pound-for-pound fighter in the world. Since 2011, he's had two fights, one in 2012, one in 2013, none last year. Now, one thing we do know is he has been in the gym. He stayed in shape. He's constantly been working on his craft. It's obvious he's been working with Amir Khan and kind of mentoring Amir Khan in the gym. That's, you know, some stories that have been going around. So he's been staying active, but yet he hasn't been making a lot of money. So it's definitely time for him to get back in the ring and reclaim his career. A lot of fighters have been surging since then. So,
right.
But
what
one thing is,
right? Let's see.
I'm sorry. One thing is, it's interesting with his weight class because he's basically cleared his weight class out, and really, there's no real new big opposition. So somebody's either going to have to drop down or move up, or he's going to have to drop down or move up, catch weight or something. But I mean, there are big names at other weights he could fight.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, you know,
it's
funny,
above him and below him.
There was a lot of talk, and I know both of you guys remember Golovkin's team saying he would take on anybody from 154 to 168. Andre Ward's name came up. His team said, you know, we want to clear out 160 first, which I think is smart. You don't just jump into a fight with Andre Ward. Mm-hmm. At the same time, Andre Ward has made it very clear that he is still very comfortable making 168. So who he fights, you got young guys like, you know, James DeGale, George Groves, who's won a couple in a row since his obliterations to Carl Froch. You also have the Durrell brothers who are starting to make noise in the division again. So you got some young guns, but there's no marquee fight unless he goes up to 175. Sergey Kovalev is not coming to 168 to fight you because, first of all, he if anything, he's going up to 200 to take that guy out. So, you know, but at the end of next year, we could be sitting here, this very same place, on this radio station in 2016, and the fight we could be looking forward to is Sergey Kovalev, Andre Ward, because if both of them take care of business this year, all of a sudden that could be the biggest fight we're looking at next year.
Mm-hmm. What would they fight at, I'm thinking? Would that be a catchweight, or would Golovkin move up?
No, I'm thinking Sergey and Kovalev, and Andre Ward and Sergey Kovalev. I'm thinking that, you know, Sergey Kovalev goes ahead and handles, if he handles a Jean Pascal and then potentially an Adonis Stevenson, and having just handled Bernard Hopkins, that would be a bigger fight for Andre Ward than Golovkin. And, you know, maybe that's the marquee fight that could get him to move up to 175, too, you know, for that fight. So,
well, what do you think? There's a lot of trash talk currently going on with the Stiverne-Wilder fight. Stiverne saying, you know, I think he's a clown, and Deontay Wilder said that I have no thought about this guy. I'm just going to take him out. You know, they're fighting on the 17th, which is, what, 2 weeks away. So,
Seven days.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, it is 7 days.
Yeah. They only have 7 days to talk more trash.
Yeah. Get down with your training up with your mouth. So,
I'll tell you one thing about that fight. Whoever gets touched on the chin, they're going to have a problem. And that's because, well, Wilder, his punch is incredible. But his chin, it's a little different, I think. And if Stiverne gets he does good in pocket, and meaning both in pockets of time during the fight, he'll lay lame a little bit, and he'll play lame duck, but then he'll explode on you. And also he'll fight in the pocket, to where Wilder, he doesn't do either one at all. He keeps a constant work rate. He stays outside, and he'll try to bomb away on you. He has to be careful because Wilder cocks back a lot. Cocks back a lot, and Stiverne could go ahead and step in and do some damage then. But he hits you. If Wilder hits you at the end of his punch, and I just can't see you laying lame on the ropes or just laying lame, not doing a whole lot, and letting Wilder tee off on you. That's not a good thing either. So both fighters have, strengths and weaknesses.
And you know what? There are question marks still surrounding both fighters. Stiverne is 36 years old. He's a fresh 36 now. But, his best win is over Chris Areola, who, albeit for the name recognition, really was nothing more than a fringe contender gatekeeper. Dante Wilder's best win is basically over me. So, he hasn't fought really anyone that presented a live body in front of him. There were supposed to be some live bodies like Malik Scott, but when push came to shove, when push came, he didn't even present a live body. With that said, both guys have, like Zito said, they both have holes in their games because they're both still developing. Again, heavyweights develop a little later. Stiverne has become a much better fighter than the guy you saw fight Ray Austin. I think the question is how Stiverne chooses to attack Deontay Wilder. I believe Stiverne, to me, goes in as a favorite. With that said, Wilder has a tremendous clutch, and Stiverne has a tendency to lay on the ropes, and I've seen him get hit with shots that if Wilder hits him with, it's going to put him to sleep, even though I believe he has a pretty solid chin. I think what you're going to see, though, and it's going to be interesting, because if Stiverne doesn't come out like a Derek Chisora, poor man's Joe Frazier, and really try to pressure and get in close to Wilder, then I think what you'll see Stiverne do is what he typically does, which is, work off of timing, angles, and speed. He'll, look to try to time Wilder as Wilder steps in. He's very good at that. Areola probably be the first one to tell you, if he can remember. But he's very good at that. And with that said, if I had to bet on someone's chin, I believe Stiverne has the more solid chin, but I believe Wilder has the bigger punch. So this fight really could go either way. But, I didn't know what Zito was quite saying, but I think he was leaning towards Stiverne as well.
Well, I can't really lean towards anybody. Well, I would lean towards Stiverne. The only thing is, as you said, it's how how he wants to choose to attack Wilder. The interesting thing is, Wilder has faster feet, but Stiverne has faster hands. So that's going to be interesting to see how that's played. Can Wilder use his feet, his athleticism? Can Stiverne use his quick burst of his fist burst?
Hey, what Wilder can't do is Wilder can't just attack ad nauseum like he does some guys when they cover up, because Stiverne is really good to cover up, roll the shoulders, and come up with the right or left, a nice counter, perfectly timed, at an awkward angle as well, because he tends to get low you know, roll his shoulders and things of that nature. So it's a very interesting fight. I've seen some footage of Wilder sparring. I've seen him get caught and you know, made to look very giraffe gangly-like with rights. I remember David Haye hit him, and wow. But I always remember what Tony Thompson said. I remember we asked Tony if Wilder could take a shot. He said he's a tough Alabama boy, and he's Bama strong. I remember Tony saying that. And Tony said he's got fight in him. You hit him, he wants to hit you right back. So I think we'll find out, you know, if what Tony said applies to not just sparring, but, you know, to the actual event as well.
Well, does he have the ability to hit you right back if you hit him? That's the question. Because a lot of people have the heart, but, I mean, the chin. Tommy Hearns, heart all day, but, I mean, chin just can't hold up.
Amir Khan.
Oh, my goodness. Maybe
if you punch Deontay in the body, he'll punch you right back. But if you punch him in the chin hard enough, he might not be able to try to punch you back the next fight when he wakes up. You never know.
Yeah, it might not be available.
And you know what? And here's the thing. This fight could happen, and we still not get a lot of questions answered, because if Deontay comes out there and catches him with a big shot, we don't know if Deontay could take a punch. If Deontay fights at range and just touches him and wins a decision that way, well, we know he can go 12, but we still don't know if he could take a good shot or if he could fight a hard 12. Stavern can let you rest in a ring. So, you know, I don't think, even though Deontay's not going 12, if Stavern fights the way he normally fights, I don't think conditioning will be an issue. It's probably the most intriguing fight you can have in the heavyweight division right now, because there's so many question marks specifically around Deontay Wilder.
And as the fight gets longer, I mean, who does better? Who's going to have better moments in the fight? I mean, will Stavern, you know, take his moments to rest and have that stamina? Or will Wilder, you know what I mean? He's young, athletic. He won't waste, you know, himself trying to take Stavern's head off.
Exactly. You know, the thing is, it's funny you say that, because Wilder could go all ape shit and literally just gas out. At the same time, Stavern gives you rounds because of his style. You know, like, I was watching the Chris Areola fight, that second fight. Before he knocked Areola out, Areola was probably up on the scorecards just by being busier.
Yeah.
You know what
and
I mean?
And I thought Stavern could have finished him the first fight, but he laid back.
Exactly. And even when he finished him, it wasn't a product of him turning up the heat. He was timing Areola and countering him, and he just caught Areola with a good counter, and it was a blind shot, and that was it. Areola never recovered. But it wasn't because he fought harder or he fought more aggressive. It was because his strategy worked very well against Areola. That same strategy is going to be more difficult to apply against a guy as big and as rangy and you know what, as athletic as Deontay Wilder. Not saying it won't work, because Wilder still is very raw, very, technically deficient. But it's a much harder strategy to apply against a guy with that type of range.
Yeah. Now, defensively, the edge I have to give to Stavern. Athletically, Wilder has defensive gifts. He can get out the way. He can ring back and Stavern swing at his head and totally miss. Stavern's going to miss more punches this fight than he did the Areola fight. But, I mean,
unless he just lays one after throwing three.
What are those punches going to mean? I mean, are they going to really count? That's the question.
There's another fight coming up on Friday night that I want to get your guys' thoughts on. Hank Lundy is coming back into the ring Petrov.
Victor Pistole. Yes.
Right.
That's a good fight to me.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good fight. It's not Victor Pistole. You're right. It's Petrov. Hank Lundy deservedly should be the favorite, but, man, Hank Lundy is an entertaining fighter because he puts it all on the line, and he's a bit chinny, but he's tough, and you know, he's a Philly fighter, man. He's a Philly fighter. And most Philly fighters are always entertaining fights, even fights that shouldn't be as entertaining as they are. And Hank Lundy's known to give you entertainment when you shouldn't be getting entertainment. When you should just be getting a sound boxing lesson, he's giving you entertainment. So either way, it's a great way, great Friday night fight main event.
Yeah. Hank Lundy is the kind of guy who will give you everything. I mean, literally everything in the ring. He's going to give you good defense at times. He's going to give you speed. He's going to give you power. He's also going to give you holes in his game. He's going to, you know, get counterpunched. He'll get pressured, I mean, effectively. I mean, he'll get knocked out. I mean, he'll give you everything.
Yes, he has.
He brings everything to the ring.
You know, it's funny because he does bring everything, and he does it from a skill set standpoint. Hank Lundy is one of those guys who has every skill in the book, but over the course of 36 minutes, he cannot always apply it together. You know what I mean? He always, you know, has great defense, but over 36 minutes, he's not always going to give, he'll give you great defense in moments. He has great offense. He'll give you great offense in moments. Like, you see every tool in the book in moments. You just don't see them all working together in unison. It's like the parts outweigh the whole with Hank Lundy to a certain extent.
Yeah, I mean, consistency a killer.
Oh my God, yeah.
Consistency a
killer.
That's
how Beltran beat him. That's how Beltran beat him.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm surprised to actually see him get back in the ring this fast. I mean, he just did fight DeLorme in December.
Yeah, he lost a split decision. And you know, DeLorme has developed. Remember when DeLorme was first coming up, they were comparing him to Trinidad. You know, he's this Hispanic puncher. But he's really started to develop some boxing skills. Number one, because his power was not like that once he moved up a level. Number two, they put him in with Burgos and got him killed. and so now he's really learning to develop his boxing skills. And he's a rangy guy for the weight. And it was a good fight. Hank Lundy felt he won the fight. But it was a very good fight. Hank Lundy didn't diminish from his performance. If anything, he fought a more disciplined fight. It's a quick turnaround for Lundy, but I think Lundy's one of those guys who likes to fight. He's a guy, too, who's always on the verge of contention. He is always one good win away from contention, and I think he wants to put himself back in that position quickly.
The other guy that seems to be coming back to life, or he calls it life after Khabibov, is Agnew. What do you think about him?
You know what? It's funny because, and I don't know how true this is, but one of the opponents I heard named for Andre Ward's comeback was Cedric Agnew at 168. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah. How about you? What do you think, Z?
That would actually make an interesting fight. Just because Agnew, in moments and spots, gave Kovalev trouble as far as hitting him. With Ward doesn't present nearly the power struggle, you know, that he would face against Kovalev. So, I mean, he would be more inclined to punch back. With that said, Agnew, I don't know if Agnew is at that level that Ward is.
No.
But I think his style would give Ward trouble in, at moment.
You know, Agnew, Dr. Chris would absolutely despise Agnew because he's one of those high guard guys. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't giving Sergey the opening to really attack, you know, which is why, you know, Sergey was getting frustrated because he couldn't land punches. Agnew wasn't hitting him with anything. He just couldn't land clean shots because Agnew was in that high guard, wouldn't open up.
All defense.
Yeah. Now, again, I do think he'd be more likely to punch against Andre Ward. But a high guard against Andre Ward, I mean, it worked a little bit for Arthur Abraham in moments. But Cedric Agnew, even though he's bigger, he's not Arthur Abraham. And I think in moments he could give Andre Ward some trouble with his style. But ultimately, he is the type of fighter who a reluctant warrior is just going to allow himself to be mauled by Andre Ward, kind of a la Alan Green. Alan Green's he's a tough guy, hit big puncher, but you know, at times he can be a reluctant warrior in there. And those guys, eventually they get eaten alive by guys like Andre Ward, even if they are more physically talented, like a Durrell. You know, Durrell to me is extremely, probably maybe the most talented guy at 168. But Andre Ward has that dog in him, and he eats guys alive who don't. He eats guys alive who have a dog in them. But a guy like Cedric Agnew, that'd be a great comeback fight for Andre Ward. It'd let Andre know where he's at, because Cedric could present him some trouble with his style. But ultimately, as the fight goes on, you're going to see Andre eat that guy alive, man.
Yeah, and I think Andre will find the avenue to put Cedric on the ropes and have him and ball him up and get the body work and hooking and all of that. One thing is, though, Cedric would be a little bigger, and he probably would be able to push Andre off a little bit more. And Andre doesn't present that power problem. Against Kovalev, he didn't want to come out of that show because he really didn't want to get hit. And that really limited his offense. That's going to be a little more difficult for Andre to do that, just off of sheer mass and a power standpoint. But Andre, he's good enough to where he's going to – he's going to acute you. That's what he does. He acutes you to death.
Yeah, or maul you. And you know, one thing about Cedric Agnew, even just watching previous fights, his problem, and even going into the Kovalev fight, was that he just typically doesn't throw a lot of punches. And, Andre Ward, he's not a guy you don't want to throw a lot of punches.
Agnew's not that kind of counterpuncher either.
No.
To not throw a lot of punches, James Toney didn't throw an excessive amount of punches, but he was a heck of a counterpuncher. You have to be effective if you're not going to throw punches when you do.
Yeah. Like, there's a reason why Agnew has not succeeded at the top levels, you know what I mean? And he's talented. He's a talented guy.
He does have to move down in weight.
There's another fight that's going to go off in 2 weeks, Mikey Alvarado and Brandon Rios. And the question is now, will that go? Because Alvarado got himself locked up for having a concealed weapon by a felon in Denver.
Yeah. Well, I know he's not allowed to bring the gun to the ring against Rios. Let me just say this. He had a concealed weapon in his he had a gun, basically, in his glove compartment.
Right.
Jermaine Taylor shot a dude, and he's scheduled to fight Sergey Moore. So, with that being said, I'm going to say I'm pretty sure Alvarado's going to go ahead and make the Rios fight. Or else Alvarado could raise a stake. Hey, I just had the gun with me. I didn't actually shoot a dude. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but the problem is, normally you wouldn't you'd give a TAP or you'd give him first appearance, they maybe give him a $10,000 bond. The $41,500 is an awful lot of money for just having a gun in the glove compartment. There's something more to it that we're not seeing.
Oh,
here.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But,
the fight's like 2 weeks away. He'll fight before the court case.
I'm sure he will. Abu Dhabi group, is really pissed because Mayweather passed up a $120 million offer to fight Pac-Man there. So they're considering taking legal action against them. I don't know where they can go. The guy didn't sign the deal. Yeah, he never had a verbal contract, but they're serious. They want to
Dubai. Dubai is quietly becoming the fight capital of the world. They're huge in mixed martial arts, and they're trying to do the same thing with boxing, obviously, with the biggest fight, some people say in history. But they're wasting their time. Floyd Mayweather, if he fights Pacquiao, is going to probably be at the MGM Grand in Vegas.
Sure.
At one time, Aram talked about building extra seats. There was also some talk about Texas. But one thing Floyd is not doing, I'd be extremely surprised, is if he goes to Dubai for that fight.
He can make, between the pay-per-views and everything else, he can make $1 million right here.
He'll make $100 million.
Easily.
Easily. I don't see. Plus, winning that fight is also important for him, and I think he's going to – right now he still is the bigger draw, and I think he's going to demand certain things, which is probably why the negotiations are always so difficult, obviously. But one of the things he's – I'm sure, you know, to give himself the best chance to win, is he's probably going to want to do it in Vegas.
Right.
Vegas judges.
Yeah, sure. And,
Xylocade, or his fragile heads. Vegas allows you to use Xylocade, allows Xylocade, is not banned in Vegas, and it's banned a lot of other places.
Right.
So,
we're happy to report that Muhammad Ali is back home after his stint in the hospital with pneumonia, and he evidently had a severe urinary tract infection. So, it's good to know that he's back, and I hadn't realized he's 72 years old, and it's really a pleasure to see the guy still out there and still being active as he possibly can, and as Fort Wright as he's always been. And, you know, love him or leave him, the guy was a hell of a fighter, probably one of the best fighters of his time, or was the best fighter of his time, and he gave it his all to the American people. So it's good to see him recovering, and we hope he stays healthy for a long time.
Rumble, guys, young man, rumble.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're right up here against against our time limit. And, Ty, you want to lead us out?
Hey, you know, it's good being back on the phone with you guys. I hope everyone enjoyed the show. We look forward to seeing you next week. We definitely want to apologize to the beautiful island of Puerto Rico for obvious reasons. Bob is our co-pilot.
I'm definitely glad to be back with you guys and everything. We miss Dr. Chris, definitely. And these shows are definitely in memory of Bob. And if anyone wants to hear any fighting words, please do call. And have a happy new year. Butch?
Thank you. Well, I want to thank both you guys again. Every time I get to Saturday, I start churning to my seat here, trying to get stuff ready for it. But the Wednesday show we do is with a bunch of good guys, and doing this show always is more fun than anything I could ever have done. It's we keep it in memory of Bob. This was Bob's baby, and I thank you for helping me each and every week with this thing and keeping it alive. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women of police and fire services. If you're out there and you see somebody in a uniform, just say hi, thank you, whatever you want to say, just acknowledge that they're there. It means the world of good to all of us. These programs are also dedicated to those who have lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Culcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Kendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerber, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Highway Patrolman Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Firefighter Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Tarpon Springs Officer Charlie Condit, Officers Lou and Rodriguez of the New York Police Department. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields. The sun shines lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hollow of his hand. Good night.
Shemalek ma'ilama Shema hezahilma Sona shene vorat fed Hakuig again ma'ilma Shema fiery blade engaged to lead. He'd break the bravest in the
All units be advised, 1999 is the last call. Last tour duty, 6/19/11. May God rest his soul.
We miss you. We love you.